We have seen some of the problems that existed in the congregations of the ones who had been scattered abroad as we began our study in the book of James and his epistle to those who were scattered abroad. We understand that they were having some difficulty understanding their present circumstances, that is, the temptations or trials that they were going through. Also, some evidently were very unstable. They were double-minded and had some serious problems with understanding themselves and the work that God had called them to do. They were partial to the rich, that is, to the people who came into the assembly dressed in shining clothing, with their wealth displayed on their hands. They had difficulty in believing that God was the source of all the good things that had happened to them. We studied that they were talking about faith and works, some emphasizing one thing and some emphasizing another, that they were hearers, at least some of them were, and not doers. There were just a number of serious problems. They, as we studied this morning, there were some who aspired to be teachers, but they were not qualified because they sought to be teachers for the glory that was in it, for the prestige that was in it, rather than because God had called them and they felt that this is the work that He wanted them to do. And then, as we also noted this morning, there was a problem with the tongue. And I rather suspect that you could have addressed this same part of the Epistle of James to every other congregation that received this letter, and you would not have said things that were not true in regard to every Christian that ever lived. What we need to understand about what we studied this morning in regard to the tongue is that you can be saved and you still have the kind of unchristian things come forth from your mouth. That's the whole contradiction that it presents. It isn't that only that if you're really saved and born again, then you'll never say anything you shouldn't. All of us know that that's not true, that we still have our Adamic nature, and that sometimes it speaks and sometimes our new nature speaks, but the sounds come from the same mouth. And so this is confusing and contradictory and inconsistent. So James is saying, grow up, mature, so that you can control your tongue. You'll never tame it, but you can control it. And in so doing, you can be a better influence for our Lord. Now, as we continue our study in chapter 3, in verse 13, he asks, who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? And this question means that there were some in the congregation who were saying, I am a wise man. He wouldn't couch this in the language that he did unless there were some who were saying to the others in the congregation, I am a wise man. So James now doesn't really define wisdom. He puts it into a more stringent circumstance, and he tells them that wisdom is something that is lived and not spoken. In other words, a wise man is something you determine as being wise by the way he lives rather than simply listening to the words that he speaks. And I know that doesn't quite fit our definition. You know, many times we think that a wise man is simply a man who can have a lot of wise sayings. And probably these people did have many wise sayings, and yet they didn't possess wisdom. Because wisdom is something that is seen and not verbalized. You can have people who have a lot of wise sayings, but they themselves are not wise. So he speaks of teachers, probably here, who were saying, not only would I like to be a teacher, but I would like to be a teacher because I am a wise person. And therefore you need me in this position or that position in order to use me as a wise person. And Jesus had already denounced this attitude in the Pharisees. They wanted to be teachers so that they could be prominent, so they could display their talents, and so they could receive honor and praise from the people in the assembly or in the congregation. But as this congregation looked for men of wisdom and trying to determine if those people who were claiming to have it really possessed it, James gives these words about the teacher and wisdom. As I stated earlier, wisdom is shown, it is not declared. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? The word endued means to fix one's mind upon, to understand, to know how to do anything, to know well. So who is wise? Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge in the sense that he knows how to do things? Now, knowing how to do things and how to get things done are two different concepts altogether. Sometimes we say, well, this man really knows how to get things done. Sometimes we say, this man really knows how to do things, and they're entirely different. So this word means it is a person who knows how to do something and is able to concentrate himself upon it so that it becomes the pivotal point of his life. In other words, wisdom and doing the things that wisdom dictates are so inseparable that he focuses upon them with a single-mindedness and therefore is able to get it done. You know, just because a person knows how to do something doesn't mean they do it. All of us may have or may know people who have expertise, but they don't do it. We wouldn't consider them wise. So here were teachers, probably, who were saying, I know how to do this, but they weren't doing it, and therefore they were not showing the wisdom that they claimed to possess. Now James says, let him, that is the person who's saying, I have wisdom, let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. The word show means to demonstrate. Let him demonstrate. And conversation means life as it is made up of actions. Literally, what we do, our lifestyle, our mode of life. Let him demonstrate with his mode of life the work that he does with meekness and wisdom. Meekness, Jesus was meek. It has in it the idea of mildness. And you're never meek unless you can do something about your situation. Jesus was meek in his death because he could have done something about it. If you're being attacked by a 6'8" bully and you don't retaliate, that's not meekness, because you probably couldn't have overcome him had you tried. Meekness is when you're the 6'8" person and a 4'5" person kicks you on the shin and you don't do anything about it. That's meekness. Jesus was meek because he could have, in every circumstance of his persecution or his suffering, he could have called legions of angels to his side and could have immediately stopped it. In fact, Paul was meek because Paul could have exercised apostolic powers, as could the other apostles, and caused the death of those people who were persecuting him. So mildness or meekness can only be displayed by those people who have the power to correct the circumstance in their favor and choose not to do it. So what he's saying is, let a man who claims to have wisdom, by the way he lives, demonstrate to everybody with a sense of mildness and meekness through the work that he does, that he is a person who possesses the attribute and quality of wisdom. Then he gives us the source and characteristic of mock wisdom or hypocritical wisdom. He says there is a mock wisdom. There is a pseudo wisdom. There is a hypocritical wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your heart, that is pointed and sharp, envying, which is jealousy or ardor. Strife means labor for wages, canvassing, intriguing, party spirit. But if you have bitter jealousy and party spirits in your heart, in fact, one writer of Greek notability defined this word strife as a self-seeking pursuit of political office by unfair means. That sort of describes the Pharisees. They were very political. They were very party spirited. And they were always intriguing to get up to the high places and get into the area of political power, even if it was in the synagogue or had to do with religion. And he is saying, if any of you people have a bitter heart and you're filled with envy and you're always politicking to get somewhere and it's really coming from your hearts, glory not. That is, don't brag about it. Don't exult over it. Can you imagine some of the conversations right now that go on in the White House? Can you imagine the laughter and the glorying and the boasting about how we put it on those folk, how we outsmarted those people? I told a lie and they believed it, or whatever you want to say. Just the very heart and soul of modern day politics on both sides of the aisle is to glory in the deception, the deceit, the victory gained by immoral and unethical manner. Well, that's exactly what this word here, glory not. If you got what you are in a congregation because of going to a person's house and saying, look, I'd like to be this in the church and I sure wish you'd nominate me, and if you will, then when I'm in office a little while, then I'll nominate you, and after a while, then we'll get brother so-and-so and he can nominate sister so-and-so and we'll all rise to this level of political power in the body. And evidently some of these people who claim to be wise had convinced the congregation of this wisdom, and this sort of politicking and party spirit had emerged and had been quite successful. And James is saying, don't boast in this, don't glory in this. And he connects it with lies. And lie not against the truth, that is, deceive. Stop being proud of what you have accomplished and stop being false to the standard of truth. What he's saying is, you got where you are not because you adhered to the standard of truth, the Word of God, but because you departed from it and used your own carnality. So quit bragging and boasting about that and stick to the truth. Then he states, this wisdom descendeth not from above. It is not wisdom, and it didn't come from above like James had said earlier. He stated in chapter 1 and verse 5, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. Now he's saying the kind of wisdom that you people who seek to be teachers and seek to gain by political intrigue, this is not wisdom from above. It doesn't come down. It doesn't descend. But is, notice, earthly, sensual, and devilish. Earthly means that which occurs upon the earth. So it has to do with the way men do things. It's what happens in Roman government. It's what happens in the military of the Roman government. It's what happens in Rome. It's what happens in Greece. It's what happens here in the city of Jerusalem. It's what happens when men are intriguing and assassinating and climbing on over one another to get to a position of power and influence. So it's just what you would encounter on the earth. Sensual. Again, it's the same word that means the life of an animal. Sometimes the word life means the life of a human, and sometimes a word means the life that animals share. And so he's saying that this wisdom doesn't come down from God, but it comes up. It's of the earth. It's what comes from our natural instincts as opposed to our spiritual nature. It is devilish, that is, demon-like. This is not the wisdom which comes down from above. It comes from this world, from your own lower nature, even from the devil. And then he defines earthly wisdom and what it does. Not, you know, here's what you can look for to identify this earthly wisdom. For where envying and strife is, he puts those two as separate and yet tied together. Envying is simply jealousy. And isn't jealousy oftentimes why people try to do things to get ahead of one another? They're jealous of one another, jealous for a position, jealous for power. Strife is exactly the same thing we mentioned before. That is a party spirit, getting things done that you want done and using things that are not found in the truth. For wherever you find jealousy and rivalry, there is confusion and every evil work. Confusion is simply being in a state of disorder and instability. Some people would call it anarchy. There's no real solid government. Everything is in a state of change and fluctuation. And in this kind of circumstance, things are done that are vile or evil. Can you imagine this kind of thing in a congregation of people? And here's people who have this zeal, very zealous, which can be translated zeal or jealousy. The one tends to sort of drive the other. And then here are the people who have this party spirit, who have this political mind, who have this drive to get ahead, to climb on top, to be the leader, to drive the thing. There's this kind of attitude. And he said, when you have this, there's anarchy, instability, confusion, as it is mentioned here. Now let's look at true wisdom. He sets out, first of all, pseudo-wisdom, false wisdom, fake wisdom. And now he says, but true wisdom in verse 17. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure. Now that doesn't, wisdom that's pure, that's sort of something we can think of that in, you know, something that we eat or drink, but wisdom being pure, well, it really means moral, or it possesses integrity. Synonyms might be reasonable or courteous or forbearing. So he's saying the first thing you look for in a man who claims to be wise is this. Is he drawing his lifestyle from the truth, and does he have moral and spiritual integrity? In other words, are there some things you couldn't get this person to do no matter what? Are there some things they will do no matter what? Are they driven by a passion for the truth? Do they have integrity? will people say of them? Well, I'll tell you about brother so-and-so or sister so-and-so. There's one thing you'll never do. You'll never catch them in a lie, because they don't lie. They wouldn't lie for their own children. They wouldn't lie to save their own lives. Now, that's in opposition to these people who would lie about anything to get just a mild advantage in some circumstance. So he's saying, look, first of all, if a person claims to have wisdom, look at their, not only their life, but look what drives them. Is there a passion for that which is noble and righteous and holy and good? Do they have integrity? Now, after you've looked and seen that, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated. Peaceable here means that they love the truth and they promote peace. Now, where would that be? It would be in their family. It would be in the congregation. First of all, if a person claims to have wisdom, look at their heart. Look at their character. Is this a person driven who puts moral integrity and spiritual integrity above everything else? And then, is this a peaceable person? Do they love peace? Look, the wisdom that is not from above, that doesn't descend from heaven, it causes all kind of strife and anarchy and confusion. That's not wisdom from above. He said, now look, why? Well, it's not wisdom of above because it's based on lies. It's based on people who have no integrity, no moral standards to guide them and drive them. He said, you're looking for a man who says, I'm wise, or a person that you want to have wisdom to put into some position of trust. Then look at them and see what drives them, what motivates them, and look at them. Are they people who want peace? And they strive for peace and they promote peace. And then he uses the word gentle, which implies a humble patience, steadfastness, which is able to suffer great injustice. In other words, when they have been done an injustice, how do they handle that injustice? They stand up for the congregation and rail at people. I'm not putting up with this anymore. You people have been you've been running over me. You've been this kind of this and this kind of that. You're wrong, and I deserve better. What kind of defense are they going to give when they are done wrong and really and truly done wrong? And then, easy to be entreated, which means malleable, are compliant. And it really comes from the word that describes a son who's willing to submit to a father's authority. It really, that pleases him to be able to say, as Jesus did to his father, not my will, but thine be done. That's a person who is easy to be entreated. Full of mercy. Mercy is compassionate action. It is not compassion. If you have compassion and you don't do anything, it's not mercy. Whenever the sinner prayed, God be merciful to me, a sinner, he meant for God to extend to him not only a feeling of mercy and compassion, but also to do the things that have to be done in order to save my soul. Put in motion the saving grace of your Son, Jesus Christ. Put in motion the thing that causes me to be justified. Put in motion the things, Lord, that'll cause you to forgive my sins. It wasn't just, God be merciful to me, a sinner, in the sense of look down here, Lord, and see how pitiful I am. That's not mercy. That's pity. That's compassion. But it's not mercy. Mercy has to have activity, or it is not mercy. So here's a person who is full of mercy and good fruit, actively compassionate and filled with good deeds. Now notice, without partiality and without hypocrisy, not showing distinction, free from indecision and put on. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. I looked at that for quite a long time. And I believe that it means the result of right living and wisdom then is grown from the planting of peace by those who are peaceable. And I'm going to make this statement because I think it's true and is what James meant. Peace in a church is always brought about and sustained by people who love peace. Now you think about that. Where does peace in a congregation come from? Well, God is peace and Christ is peace, but how is peace in a congregation sustained or brought into being? I can tell you how. By people who love peace. Now, a person who's quarrelsome and divisive, who's angry at themselves, who are at war with themselves, you never see a person like this wanting peace. They always want to stir up trouble. So if you want peace, remember that it comes from people who sow peace. If you want peace in this church, do you know what you'll do? You'll try to say the things and do the things that make for peace. If you want trouble, you'll say the things that cause trouble. Just think about it. If you want peace in this congregation as you leave this afternoon, you'll say things that make for peace. If you want trouble, you'll say the things that cause trouble. And that's exactly what James is saying here. Peace comes from people who know the power and the beauty and the importance of peace. And they sow it. They sow it all the time. That's what they do. They continually sow peace. They plant peace. They impart peace. And as a result, there is peace in the body of Christ and peace in the congregation. If you try to make trouble, they'll not respond. They won't let it make trouble. They'll root it out before it makes trouble. Why? Because they love peace. Do you love peace that much? I hope we all do, don't you? That we love peace. Now, that's not saying, well, if you believe in immersion, that's all right, and if you believe in sprinkling, that's all right. We're not talking about that. You know, we're not talking about doctrinal issues, peace at any price. Well, that'd fall under the category of politics, wouldn't it? Peace at any price? Make friends with anything? Well, that'd be the thing that politicians would boast about. Why, I made a pact with this group, and I made a pact with that group, and I made peace with this group, and whatever, and now I've got to where I want to go. I've made a pact with the gay rights, and I made a pact with the lesbians, and I made a pact with the feminists, and I made a pact with this, that, and the other, and now I've got where I am. Now, that's not what he's talking about. That's not peace. That's politics. And it's devilish and sensual. It doesn't come from God. That's not the wisdom that comes from God. Now, if you want trouble, you'll make trouble. It's just that simple. If you want trouble, and usually we make trouble because we want to feel a sense of importance. You usually say things that cause trouble because you don't feel like you're getting the attention you ought to have. It's like a little kid at home who, in sibling rivalry, he steals something or burns something down or does something mean. He's just a mean little kid. Why? Because he needs attention. That happens in congregations. But if you really love peace, you will say the things, you will do the things, you'll be involved in the things that bring peace. So if a man says, I have wisdom, but he is a troublemaker, you know that the wisdom that he is hypocritical wisdom. It is mock wisdom. It is pseudo wisdom. It is not the wisdom that descendeth from above. It is of the earth. It is sensual. It is devilish. So just because a person says they have wisdom, it doesn't mean they have wisdom. And just because they're able to enunciate a lot of wise sayings doesn't mean they're wise. What is a wise person? Well, it's a peaceable person whose works bear out. They not only know how to say it ought to be done, they do it. They're gentle, they're easily entreated, they're kind. They have mercy. You can get along with them. In fact, it's difficult not to get along with them. You have to really try not to get along with them because they're compliant. Sounds like Jesus, doesn't it? Do you ever see Jesus wanting to make war? You ever see Jesus wanting to cause trouble just for the sake of trouble? Never. Nor Paul.